Right now, it's time to bring in Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the Frickin' Frack of Nick and Knack. It's time for Appraise This. Of course, they operate a Treasure Quest Appraisal Group, TQAG.com, on the web. And we'd love to have them in on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, guys.
Hey, good,
good morning.
How are you both?
Good, thanks.
Doing well. Doing well.
So it's in the mid. It's going to be in the mid 50s. Isn't that a beach day in Connecticut?
It's actually going to be in the mid 60s tomorrow and the day 60, after that.
Oh my God!
I might bring out the polo shirt and shorts. You never can tell.
We're having a heat wave. Yeah.
It's a disastrous time when I bring out the shorts because, like most white males, but wear long pants and stuff during the winter time. You lose the hair on your legs, and your hair look like, and your legs are just bone white. and when you're 68 and you have hairless bone white legs, it's even worse.
I totally resemble that that comment.
Oh gosh. Well, anyway, one of the things I was looking at, and it's actually an article that came out in February, and that was Asia Week, New York sales, and the different auction houses that were involved in that. Now there's somebody up here who is well connected with Asia and antiques. Is there something special? Now this is where we get into talking about collecting and antiques and people's tastes. You look at the different branches and the different things that come up in auctions, and things like this, Asia. And different parts of the country, is Asia one of the most popular things for auctions like this?
Well, Asia Week has been around for many, many years in New York, and it's not unlike the regular auction world. When Asia Week happens, it's a major event because people from all over the world get involved in this, and
both in person and virtually.
Yes, well, virtually, yeah. But I just remember when we lived in New York, all of the events leading up to and during Asia Week, this was an amazing event that happens every year. And the Asian market for art, a lot of the great Asian art, it seems that a lot of it is being repatriated, I guess. I don't know if that's the correct term. A lot of Asian buyers are trying to recover a lot of the art to bring back to the country of origin. I think we've probably seen an increase in that over the past 15 years or so, 15 or 20 years. And it is reflected in the prices of the high-end Asian market when you see the auction, and a lot of the buyers are Asian buyers.
You know, it's interesting. I hear you talking, and the reason I bring this up, there's two things I remember as a kid that we were both, basically all of us were told that if we'd ever did any of these things, it would mean death. And that one was, believe it or not, Buddha, but it was done in porcelain, and it was quite large. But we had an emerald Asian ashtray that had, dragons or whatever on it, and I never really understood fully the value of those things until I grew up much later in life.
Well, Asian art, for some reason, it's definitely its own niche. Yeah. Not so much if you're Asian, but for the American art market, there are people who really are into the Asian market, but we're not talking about like the Asian piece of furniture that your mom or your grandmother had sitting in her living room. We're talking about really, really specific high-end, a lot of them are ancient pieces. It's not
and
just
it could
the
be
art.
Porcelains. It could be bronzes. It could be, I mean, there's a variety of medium, too.
Could, and it could be fabrics. It could be rugs. But it's a very specific niche because it's very, very high end. So I know Asia Week, I want to say it started somewhere in the mid 70s. I just remember when it, there was always such a big hubbub every year leading up to Asia Week, and the Armory in New York was always very busy. And then also, I'm trying to remember the name of the organization that really it started out kind of small and turned Asia Week into a major thing. And the stuff that we normally see from day to day is not what I would consider to be
in that league.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to say unworthy, but I guess in a way it is.
Yeah, well, it's not at that. It's not at that level. No,
it's not.
It's not.
Because, but that's typical. But Greg, but that's also typical when you look at the art market and they do the contemporary, modern, and impressionist sales. Is that's usually a week, and then they do that in March and November, you know, both in the United States and in Europe. So it's, they've taken something from that, but this is a special time because, I mean, you see it everywhere with Asia Week. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, Greg. I'm sorry. I just kind of jumped in. I thought you were done.
Well, the thing about what happens during Asia Week, it's a very concentrated group of artists and art from historical to contemporary, and all of the events that are surrounding it, that people come from all over the world to celebrate it.
Well, it's, you know, it's like everything else. My mother and father's taste, I sit back and look at it now, and it was so odd because that was so different than their normal taste in things to have around the house, which it surprised me. And as I grew older, I grew to appreciate that it was from their travels. Another thing, and maybe you guys can explain this to me, watches. You have some watches that gain so much. It's amazing. I mean, people think of Rolex and everything, but it's not just Rolex. Watches are a very, very collectible thing. I remember when there was one of those, you know, watches that you could hold in your hand that had the chain, that was from my grandfather. That was watches are amazingly collectible as well.
Yeah, yeah. There are certain makers that are even more collectible. Like everyone only thinks of Rolex. Because that's the, I guess you might want to say the Cadillac or let's say the Mercedes of watches. But, you know, really, Patek Philippe is probably, I feel anyway, is a more desirable. Everybody knows the watches for. That are expensive, but you know, when you have a Patek Philippe, some of them can sell for $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, and that's on the secondary market. So when the Rolex is probably one of the most sought after, because, and also one of the most faked. You can buy a fake Rolex for pennies on the dollar, and it's hard for a lot for the average person to understand what a fake one is. But when you have a Patek Philippe, for example, I haven't really seen very much fraud when it comes to some, a maker like that. And I think it's because it is such a special thing. So I do know that watches, even Bulova, do you remember, and I'm sure you saw your grandmother wear a Bulova watch. And growing up, my mother, my grandmother, my aunts, they all had the Bulova watch with the fake diamonds, and those things, even Bulova, are bringing a good amount of money today. A vintage Bulova watch for a man, first of all, the design of the Bulova watch has always been very high quality. So when watches come up, they have auction houses that do just nothing but watches. So, and then I just remember the first time on the Antique Roadshow, they're the guy that's their shop is in New York, and that's all they deal with is just these antique watches. So it's kind of under the radar as far as collectability, because when they do sell there, again, it's just like the Chinese art. It's not the everyday sort of watch that people are interested in. They want something special. They either want the American watches like Bulova, and then you have the people who have the disposable income to pay $20,000 for a Patek Philippe watch, and they don't even wear it. They usually just display it. So,
well, you know, I have a Timex watch that's about 30 years old, and I only wear it when I go to very, very special occasions, because I don't want to lose it, and I would never think of getting rid of it, because it's a cool watch. It just operates. But you know, when I was growing up, my dad was in show business. He was very successful, and things that he had, which became icons. I think if you were an entertainer in the late 40s and 50s, my father didn't wear rings or anything like that, but he would have tie clips that were diamond and emerald. He would have cufflinks. Oh, the cufflinks that he had were so expensive, and even his cigarette carrier, the case, was gold, and he had a gold lighter along with it. I mean, those things obviously bring value today as well, as long as they're authentic, right?
Oh yeah, the market for vintage lighters is really something. It's kind of leveled out a little bit over the past 10 years because of what's happened with the internet. They're much, much more available, but they still do a good watch and men's accessories. You can buy, where was it we saw that pair of cufflinks, that men's cufflinks that sold, I forget where it was, just little tiny Tiffany men's cufflinks, and it was also the shirt studs. I think it sold for something like $10,000 or $15,000. So, and there again, it's the haves and the have-nots. So you have your Patek Philippe people, and then you have your Timex people like we are.
Well, it's also with and you guys know, because you go out and do auctions, you do a lot of it. It's those little things that go along when you dress up to do something fancy that really makes the difference and that people notice.
Yeah, well, it also gives you a certain amount of confidence when you can display your best, you know, put your best foot forward, as they say, and people notice those little tiny things, especially because we do a lot of events, and that's one of the things that we always look at, because we're always looking for cufflinks and shirt studs for Tim, because he has to stand out when he does these events.
Well, it's getting dressed up. It's also because I have shirts that need studs and cufflinks.
Well, that's, you know,
not so much
We're talking about studs and cufflinks now, and you know, I bet you there's 50% of the people out there right now that don't realize how important those are. It's amazing.
Especially if you're going to an event and you don't have that, and your shirt doesn't have buttons.
I got a funny story about that. My first time on the QE, on the Queen Elizabeth II, I booked, and you had to wear a tuxedo or a dinner jacket, and I did bring, I brought my tuxedo shirts, right? I didn't bring the studs, and so I had to somehow improvise on the QE2, and wear. I ended up wearing, this is terrible, a polo shirt, a white polo shirt that I had to tie under and everything like that. Because I forgot to bring this.
You always were a trendsetter.
Well, it was a good thing that I drank a lot on that. I drank on the beer too, because I'm sure what the people were talking about is, what is it? Because at the time I was like 420 pounds. What is that big guy doing wearing a tuxedo with a polo shirt? But it worked. It got me in the restaurants. Well, anyways.
Well, I will tell you this, that every day I get notifications from auction houses for specific auctions, like for jewelry, men's jewelry, ladies' jewelry, fine jewelry, watches, and they're just solo sales. In other words, all that's in them is cufflinks. All that's in them are fine timepieces. So it used to be when, at least in regular auctions, they would be a part of a sale. Now they actually have their own market and their own dedicated sales, and they can have up to, you know, 300-400 lots of exquisite jewelry and watches. So it is a part of the market that is kind of, I don't want to say underserved, but it's not as in your face as art and collectibles are.
Well, thank you guys for embracing my trip down memory lane here this morning.
Yeah, I love that story about the QE2.
It was hilarious. Now, the funny thing is, I had also a white dinner jacket. Okay, that was fine. But the black tuxedo, that at first, now that I got dressed and I'm looking around, and I realized, how can I go with an open shirt?
Right. Yeah.
But it did work. It did work. Sure. I had a cummerbund. I had a cummerbund and everything.
I'm sure you pulled it off with grace and style.
I don't know with grace and style, but I did pull it off. Oh my God. All right, guys. We'll speak to you next week.
Take care,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack, TQAG.com on the web is where you will find them.